What is up, cyber and crypto homies? Today is July the 1st of 2024, and this is episode number 115 of the Cybersecurity and Cryptocurrency Podcast. I'm your host, Eric English. All the views and opinions on this podcast are solely my opinions and do not reflect the opinions of my employer. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at CyberCryptoGuy. All right, so we're continuing on our series of personal security kind of 101 and what you can do to protect yourself, protect your family, protect your identity, protect your home network, your home devices, you name it. So today, the primary topic today is about home network security and some of the things that you can do on your home network to protect all your stuff. And a lot of this that I'm going to talk about today is free and open source, so that makes it even better. So without further ado, I think we can jump into probably the biggest piece of home network security is your firewall, right? So what can we do to protect our home with a better firewall? Now, there are, you know, of course, you can go out and get some crazy expensive, you know, commercial firewall, but that's really unnecessary for your house. So what can we buy that's fairly cost effective and or maybe free, right? So what I did personally, I used an old desktop computer. It wasn't, you know, ancient, but it was, you know, 10 years old probably. It had, you know, a 250 gig hard drive and I think 8 gigs of RAM. And it had a decent, like, i3 processor in it, right? Nothing crazy. But I was able to use this with some software, open source software called PFSense. PFSense is a firewall software that you can buy, or I'm sorry, you can buy it, but you can also get a free community edition, which is what I use. You can pay and get their support and all that kind of stuff too if you choose to go that route. Personally, I just use the free community edition and it works great. So I use this really old desktop computer. I did have to purchase a secondary network card. And what I did was I actually got a network card that plugged into your PCI slots on the desktop computer. But the network card I got had two ports on it. So, and both were gigabit Ethernet. And really, you don't need to go much past gigabit because I don't know many folks that have fiber running through their house, and you're kind of limited by, you know, copper Ethernet cables. But regardless, you can go fiber if you choose to, and you can get a 10 gig Ethernet card if you really want to go crazy. But then you have to look at how fast is your internet connection. Is your internet connection more than a gig? Probably not. And also, too, you know, your Wi-Fi at home may not be gig speed Wi-Fi either. So a lot of considerations there. But getting back to the firewall piece, PFSense, again, is free and open source. If you choose to pay for it, you can and get all the support that they offer. And so I just use this old desktop machine. I downloaded PFSense onto a flash drive. I booted from the flash drive, installed it to the 250 gig hard drive, and away I went. And it was pretty easy, I have to say. And you can do some general configuration via, you know, they have an interface that's very, you know, DOS-like, if you will, to initially get it set up. If you need to set static IPs or anything like that, you can certainly do that. And you probably want to set a static IP for, like, your management interface. It'll ask you, you know, what IP address do you want to use for the gateway? And what subnet mask do you want to use? And do you want to set up DHCP? And all that kind of fun stuff. So you can do all of that after the initial installation of PFSense. It's super easy. And again, you want to hook it up to a monitor so you can see all these options. I have a friend that actually used an old laptop and he got a USB network card, which I thought was cool. And he uses an old laptop for his PFSense firewall. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. I just happened to have an old desktop laying around that I used. So once you've got PFSense installed, it can be headless essentially, because once you unplug the monitor and go plug it in up, you plug it up on your network. You do want to hardwire, of course. You can basically wire in from your... What I did was I wired from my cable modem to the onboard, so the motherboard NIC card, and it was also gigabit. And then, of course, I added that PCI network card with two ports on it. And so my primary network gateway was going to the onboard network card. And then I used the other two ports for some really cool stuff that you can set up if you are going to use a VPN, which was the secondary topic today. And of course, I do highly recommend you use a VPN of some sort. And what you can do is basically set up a one interface can be for, you know, the devices that need, you know, like Netflix and stuff like that. You don't want to use that on a VPN because they'll block you, or they'll, if your IP changes too much, then they can restrict your account and all kinds of stuff. So for anything that's wireless that needs to, you know, be fairly static, I guess, if you will, as far as the IP address goes, and it needs to show one similar location, then I have an access point. And personally, I used Ubiquiti access points because they're super stable, but you can use any decent access point that you want. I did go ahead and pay for the Ubiquiti access points and set up a controller and all that stuff. But again, that was just for me in my particular setup. You can use any access point you like. But so essentially, one of those access points works for all of the devices and all the things, all the Wi-Fi things, all the IoT kind of things. I don't have many, but anything like that that needs to go out to the internet that I don't really care is if it's private or not. And so that goes out, that's connected to one of my wireless access points. Now I have a secondary wireless access point hooked up to that second port on the PCI network adapter that I put in the desktop machine. And I configured pfSense to use, you know, you can set it up with any VPN service pretty much. You can use Nord, you can use PIA, you can use Mulvad, you can use pretty much any of them, Proton, whatever you like. You set that up to only be used on that one particular network interface. So that protects, and then so I have an access point off of that second interface. And so that basically gives me, you know, the VPN, the privacy of the VPN, and it's whole home VPN, right? It's set up to where anything that's on it is on the VPN. That way I don't have to worry about every single device installing the VPN client and putting in the username and password and then connecting every single time. I don't have to worry about that because it's always on VPN. So it makes it really nice. It protects everything that's connected to it. And really, you can hook up your Netflix to it too if you want. The problem is, you know, again, if your IP changes a lot, or, you know, Netflix and other services like that, they like to block a lot of that kind of stuff too, kind of right out of the gate. So it may be a little challenging to do it that way, but if you like the challenge, go for it. But personally, I chose to have two access points, and, you know, one's just VPN, one's for all the stuff like Netflix. So once you have all your access points set up and you've got your VPN configured and everything is basically set the way you want it to be set, now you can go into pfSense and start adding some of the built-in services that they have for security. So there's quite a few to look at. So, you know, take your time with looking at these. But a few that I use personally is the PF Blocker NG is one of the ones that I use. And Suricata is the second one that I use. And both of those are great. You can, you know, block specific countries. You can filter all kinds of stuff. And Suricata is more for like the monitoring and alerting kind of side of things. And we're going to talk about that here in just a second, because I have this tied into another tool that we're going to get to here. So very cool stuff. They have way more than just those two things, by the way. You can set up so much stuff in pfSense. It is really amazing the level of stuff you get from a free firewall like this. So and again, it's super, super simple to set up. If you've got an old desktop machine, buy a NIC card, you know, from Amazon and stick it in the PCI port. Get some access points and away we go. So once your firewall is all set up the way you like it, the secondary kind of thing here, there's a couple others, but we already talked about VPN briefly as well. And, you know, of course, VPNs are important for privacy and security and all those things, right? So most people wonder, which one should I get? And there are so many to pick from. Really, it just depends on your threat model. But really, you also want to get a reputable VPN vendor, not one that says that they're not storing logs and actually is, or they've got a bad reputation, or they're based in a country where, you know, the government can subpoena information from them, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you want to make sure that you pick one that you like. There is a site that I will put a link to in the show notes. I think it's that one, privacysite.xyz or something like that. Anyway, this guy has a huge VPN comparison chart that he created with all the VPN vendors. It goes through all the different privacy laws and whether or not they're applicable to this particular vendor, because the vendor may be located in a country where it is or is not applicable. And so they kind of go through all of that. And it's really cool, really good, a good resource to look at. But Mulvad is a great one, Private Internet Access, NordVPN, ProtonVPN. Those are just a few to kind of list off the top there. You can use two or more if you choose to. It's really up to you. So with these vendors too, they do have it where you can get a dedicated IP address, which to me is a little scary. Because as you can imagine, if you have a dedicated IP address and you're doing something nefarious and that company gets subpoenaed, well, you know, they could trace it back to you. But, you know, a lot of these VPN services allow you to purchase the VPN service with something like a Bitcoin or, you know, other cryptocurrencies that are private. Bitcoin's not exactly perfectly private, but you get the point. You can purchase with things like Bitcoin and others. And of course, you don't have to give them your real name. Like, you can, your name can be John Smith when you sign up for these VPNs. They don't care. As long as they get their money, you'll get your service, right? So if you want to sign up using John Smith and pay with Bitcoin, then, you know, if you get that dedicated IP, well, who are they going to track that back to? Really nobody. So there are ways to, you know, prevent, you know, disclosure of your information when you're signing up with these VPN services. But regardless, if you want to have your Netflix and everything else, everything on the VPN, no matter what, then that dedicated IP is probably for you, because as you can imagine, you know, with the shared IPs, there's all kinds of nefarious stuff going on. And, you know, that's ideally why these vendors block it, right? They don't want to have all this nefarious traffic hitting their firewalls and stuff. So they just block it outright. So if you get this dedicated IP, you can have your entire house just on the VPN, period, end of story, no exceptions. And that way the IP is private to you and it is dedicated to you. No one else can use it. And all those vendors like Netflix and Hulu and whoever else you use, they will just see that one dedicated IP and it won't ever change. So that's certainly a way to be able to use the whole home VPN for everything without having to have two separate access points and configuring all that craziness. So, but either way, it is doable if you need the two access points and some stuff on and some stuff off of VPN. But you do get a lot less of the, you know, Google CAPTCHAs and things like that when you have a dedicated IP address. So that's one of the other benefits to that is, you know, a lot of these vendors like Google, when you do a Google search and you're coming from a VPN IP address, well, they're going to present a CAPTCHA to you. You got to prove that you're human and all that kind of fun stuff. Because as you can imagine, people are setting up bots and they're doing all kinds of crazy stuff while on a VPN. So the dedicated IPs are kind of a cool thing, especially if you don't do anything nefarious. You don't have anything really to worry about there. You just want it to be private and secure. Well, that's definitely a good way to do it. So also too, on all of your devices that are mobile, for example, you want to have that VPN installed on them as well and make sure that it's always running if you can. And again, this is where, you know, you can do the dedicated IP. It's really up to you. But on your mobile devices, it could still use that same dedicated IP, which would be super cool, right? Either way, you can set it up to use a kill switch so that any and all internet traffic has to go out that VPN. And if it doesn't, then it kills your internet connection until the VPN connection is restored, and then it will pass the data through. So there's a lot of ways to do it. And certainly we just want to make sure that you're protected with a VPN. Your privacy is definitely important. And so there's also, to dive a little bit further into the per device kind of VPN stuff, the other piece to that is having a secure and private device too. And so this is where it gets a little more complicated. And it depends on your threat model and how far you want to take this, right? But if you need a private and secure device, well, there's a lot of other steps that you need to take. And you have to get, you know, a private and secure or privacy-based operating system for your mobile device. And if you want that kind of device, again, you need to have a private and secure operating system, something like Graphene OS. It's open source. It's based on Android, but they pull a lot of the stuff out of it that would report back to Google and all kinds of stuff like that. So if you need to go that route, that is another step that you can take to make your personal device device, your phone, extremely private as well. And, oh, by the way, if you want private cell phone service, you can sign up with something like Mint Mobile. And with Mint Mobile, you don't have to give them your real name or home address. They don't care what your name or home address is. As long as they get paid, they will give you the service. So you can give them any name that you want, pretty much any address you want, and you'll get a SIM, and you can activate that SIM in your phone, right? It's good. Make sure you have a compatible phone, of course. But for Graphene OS, you do have to have a Google Pixel phone. And on their website, it shows which phones they support. Of course, you have a super old one, it probably won't support it. But if it's anything, I think Pixel like 5 or 6 and newer, you should be good to go. But on those Pixel devices, you essentially wipe the OS that's on it, the Google OS, you know, from Google, pre-installed with Pixel devices, and then you install Graphene OS. And they've got instructions on how to do this on their website. Now, there are some caveats to a Graphene OS. It is, you know, it's super private, super secure, all those great things. However, all those apps and things that you normally use probably won't work because push notifications don't work typically. Because those push notifications come from Google in most cases. So Graphene has tweaked their OS to where you can have these push services enabled, but still have everything else from Google disabled. So they've tried to get it to where it's a little more convenient to use the Graphene OS. I tried it a while back and it was super cool, but yeah, a lot of my stuff didn't work. So I kind of had to get away from it because I needed the push notifications. I needed all that kind of stuff. So that's another consideration. And then you can put your VPN on top of that as well. And you're just, you know, your privacy and security levels just start going through the roof here. So that's a couple of notes about VPNs and then your home firewall. Some other cool stuff to check out is Wazoo. It's I know it's a weird name, but it's W-A-Z-U-H. Wazoo, I think it's how you say it. Anyway, this is a free and open source SIM, and basically it is, you know, the probably one of the better free and open source SIMs I've ever seen. You can install this on an old computer. Again, I've got it running on an old machine that just had an i3 processor and 8 gig of RAM. It has a little bit of a bigger hard drive. I think I put like a 500 gig hard drive because it does do a lot of logging. And essentially, you install a little client on your, you know, your home computers, like your PCs, or if you have any Macs or anything like that, and then it reports back into the Wazoo server, and it sends logs to that Wazoo server, and the Wazoo server will report on, hey, this looks malicious, or hey, this is malware, whatever it is, right? So it's super cool, open source SIM. Wazoo.com, I believe, is their website to check them out. And I think they took a lot of their stuff from the Elk stack or the Elastic stack and kind of merged it all together. And maybe this is the new project from Elastic stack. I don't know, to be honest. But either way, it is super cool. Has a lot of features that I haven't even been able to set up yet because it's got so many. But really, if you want to take your home network security to the next level, that's a way to do it. You can also, remember when we talked about Cerakata on the PFSense firewall? Well, you can set up Cerakata on, or you can set up Cerakata to send logs to Wazoo. So you can also send your firewall logs to Wazoo. So you don't have to just do, you know, the workstations at your home. So that's super cool. Really gives you a lot of valuable information. Sometimes it's kind of noisy. You have to filter some things out, but it's a great platform, especially open source and free to use just for some extra protection on your home devices and your firewall if you're using PFSense. I'm sure they do have other integrations with other firewalls. I haven't looked. They do have some cloud integrations as well with Google Cloud, easy for me to say, AWS and things like that, even Azure, I believe, too. So a lot of cool capabilities built into this tool. Now, again, it's if you're going to host it on your home network, those devices have to be on your home network in order to check into the Wazoo server. So if you take your device outside of the network, of course, it won't be able to check in unless you set up this Wazoo server in a DMZ or something like that so that it can be publicly facing and those devices can check in kind of whenever. I don't necessarily recommend anything like that. That's up to you if you choose to do that kind of thing. So that's kind of the gist of the home network setup that I would recommend. I'm sure there are other things out there that I'm not doing, but you have to think about, you know, what's right for you. What is your threat model? And again, PFSense has a lot of other modules that I don't use, but they've got a huge library of things that you could pick from to help secure your home network. So it's totally worth diving into, reading more about, learning about, just tinkering with it and figuring out, hey, this works for me, or hey, this is too much noise, whatever you want to do. It's got a lot of cool features. So again, just to recap, pfSense, you want to set up a VPN of some sort, and I'll provide the link to that site that kind of does the evaluation or the review of all the various VPNs. And then Wazoo. Wazoo's super cool. And then we also talked about Graphene OS, a way to have a super private and secure operating system on your phone. And again, a lot of this stuff takes a lot of work to get it set up initially. There are plenty of tutorials online and things like that. I'm not going to go into that. But if you need help, of course, Google it. Look it up on YouTube. There's plenty of videos and tutorials and all kinds of stuff to help walk you through it. So that's it on the security side of things. The only other thing I wanted to touch on real quick was the cryptocurrency markets. Now, we did have quite the dip there last week. Bitcoin dipped all the way down to, I want to say it was 58,000 roughly, maybe just above 58,000. And again, I think that was one of the, you know, one of the levels that Bitcoin was hitting, one of the lows. And of course, the high is still 72, 73. But right now, Bitcoin's sitting at $63,281. And again, that's still way up there. And that's still an awesome thing to see. But we still haven't seen the bull run. And I'm very curious when and if it's going to happen. I still think it will, but I just don't know when. Also, too, on the whole cryptocurrency side of things, there's a guy on YouTube named Joe Grand, and he's a hardware hacker. And this guy has a really cool YouTube channel where he hacks. So people, of course, you know, have lost their PIN numbers and their passwords and, you know, all kinds of things to their crypto wallets. Well, this guy, Joe Grand, helps people recover those funds from, you know, various types of crypto wallets. One guy was using a Trezor or Trezor, however you say it, hardware wallet, and he forgot the PIN number to it and all kinds of crazy stuff. And so Joe has a really cool YouTube channel showing how he kind of hacks into this hardware. And one of them was an Android phone that he hacked into, and another one was this hardware wallet. And it's just really cool. It's cool to watch, you know, the process and all the things that he has to do. And it's just a really cool watch. If you have time, go out there and check out Joe Grand. Super fun and super detailed on how he gets into all these crypto. Well, he got into that Android phone. It turned out the guy didn't have but like $10 worth in it. He thought he had millions of dollars in there. And whoops! No, you don't have anything in there, buddy. So anyway, it's super cool watch if you got the time to check that out. All right, folks, that's all I've got for today. Appreciate everybody listening, and we'll talk again next week.